Hey, everybody, if you're connected, we're just going to wait about 10 seconds for everybody else who's connecting to get started before we launch our discussion today. So just sit tight and we will be starting very momentarily. All right, I think we're good. Thanks for sticking with us. Thanks for waiting a minute and joining us today. My name's Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be moderating today's webinar on what's working in collections today. It's been about 2 months since the coronavirus essentially shut most of the country down, and along with much of the credit and collection industry with it. But despite the challenges of getting employees up and working from home in a regulatory environment that seems to change by the day, there have been many bright spots for the industry. In this webinar, we've got a panel of executives from across the credit and collection industry with us to talk about the bright spots in collections and what is working for them and how they got to that point. Before we get started, let me take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Mike Hiller is what many would call a transformational leader. The qualities of encouraging innovation and change is what you witness once inside the office. If you ask him, he says he's a workaholic and work in progress, preferring servant leadership archetypes over all else. With more than a decade of experience in operations and executive management roles, he joined American Profit Recovery in 2005 and has served as Vice President of Collections since 2012. He is a licensed collection manager in Michigan, has served as a subject matter expert for the Michigan Department of Licensing and Regulatory Affairs, and was recently appointed by Governor Whitmer and is currently serving a 4-year term on the Michigan Board of Collection Professionals. Irene Hoheisel has been in the industry for more than 20 years. She began as a collector and quickly became head of the collection department, as well as training, leadership, and compliance for ARSI. She has served on multiple ACA committees and has been quoted and published in multiple articles in Collector and Pulse magazines. She's a certified ACA instructor and a source for many due to her extensive knowledge of medical collections and the laws that govern. Irene has earned an alphabet soup of designations, certifications, awards, and recognitions for her knowledge in the collection industry. She serves as president of the Kansas Collectors Association and regularly presents educational seminars for her clients, as well as ACA, Chambers of Commerce, and many other associations. Matt Kiefer is the Chief Officer of Information Compliance and Development for the Preferred Group of Tampa. Matt's been working in healthcare revenue cycle management since 1997. He has more than 18 years of experience specific to both first and third party collections and the unique challenges related to compliance and technology. Matt is a past president and now the current president again for the Florida Collectors Association, former membership director for the National Healthcare Collectors Association, member of HFMA, a 2-time national delegate, and a current member of the Healthcare Services Committee for ACA International. His focus is not only on leveraging technology and revenue recovery, but on compliance, process improvement, customer service, and creating a better image for the industry through leadership and education. Greg Ruffino is the director of training at Williams & Fudge. He's worked at Williams & Fudge for the past 8 years, starting as a collector and working his way up the ladder to director of training. Greg spoke recently at ACA International's conference on the topic of training and is a certified training specialist with ACA International. The format for today's webinar is going to be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing. If you submit a question, please either enter it into the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel or type it in through the chat module. This event is being recorded and a recording will be made available in the coming days on AccountsRecovery.net. With that, let's launch into our discussion today. First, let's get a sense of where we are relative to where you guys used to be. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate the effectiveness of your collection efforts today? And how has that number changed in the past 2 months? Mike Hiller, we'll start with you if you don't mind.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And thanks for having us on today. Boy, promoted by Governor Whitmer, and now I'm going to quote a CNN topic. So to risk sounding like a left-wing sycophant. No, so look, credit card debt's at a 30-year low right now. And that was a CNN business article. It was published this month. So what are the implications for collections with a statistic like that? So number one, I would say for anyone who's spent any amount of time working in our industry, it's no mystery that income tax time is really the equivalent of what we call forced savings for many of Americans. So it's really a boon the first quarter of the year. And to that end, in 2020, with all these stimulus checks, never mind the fact that unemployment rate is continuing to increase, you know, if you make less than six figures, you can expect a stimulus check, probably two in the short future. You know, so that's one aspect, is we kind of had a second round of what I would call income tax season. And then secondly, not only are we, you know, competing with one another for contacts as far as debt payments, right? They owe our clients, they probably owe your clients. A lot of agencies are furloughed right now. And I would add that our competition with spam callers, timeshares, student loan consolidation, vehicle warranties. I can't tell you the last time I got a spam call. So I think a lot of the employees that are competing for contacts with consumers are furloughed, and we're really reaping the benefits with increased contact rates. And as far as the long way back to your question more directly, now I'm going to risk sounding pretentious, but I would say if we were buzzing along at a 7.5 to an 8 on a 10-point effectiveness scale, I would say we're currently sitting around 9.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah. I'm going to say if I were to count this at a 10, let's say we were at a 10 before because we were productive, and we're just going to use that as numbers to show the difference of where we are now. I'm going to put us at an 8 now. And the only reason why I would do that is because we also have on-staff attorneys and file legal action to garnishment, hold hearings, things like that. And with most of the courts being closed or having a lot of laws being, like the, all the different things that are state and CARES Act, HEROES Act, and they're all mentioning different things about not being able to do garnishments or doing them differently. So our income with our legal collections has decreased. But with that said, I want to add a little bit back. I would take off maybe two or three for that, but then at least add back one. Because basically what Mike was saying, we have a lot more contact with people. We have our legal staff that normally only took inbound calls, now making outbound calls on some easier accounts. And with all the stimulus checks and the communication that we're making, and we're being a lot different on our talk-offs, which I know we should talk about today too, but it seems like we're getting a lot more voluntary payments than we ever have before. And I know with the stimulus checks that helped with a little bit more money, we have a lot of people that are actually making the same exact income they were making before. You know, their pay hasn't changed at all, but yet now they're home. And a lot of those things up being home, they're saving money. They're saving gas in their car. They're saving money on the expenses of doing all the things they would normally do on the weekends. Yes, they're spending $8 million a week in food, but they're spending a lot less money on things that they had budgeted for, where now, you know, they're sitting there and they're thinking, I'm home. Let me clean up my act a little bit. We seem to have a lot of people that are calling, trying to clear up debt, people we haven't heard from in forever that are trying to clear up their debt. So with that, and we haven't laid off or furloughed one person. So our entire staff is working, and to have that type of workflow and communication and be able to contact people, we're actually getting more payment plans. Yes, they're smaller. A lot of those things are being forgiven, but there's more. The quantity is more. And we have a lot less expense, a lot less overhead expense with such a small staff in the office. We're not doing a lot of the fun things we usually do that cost us money, the little parties we throw and things like that. We're not traveling, so the company's been saving money that way. It's actually been not as bad as we thought. I'm not going to lie, I was a little worried about what it was going to look like. So I'd say an 8. I think I'm going to stick us at an 8 right now, and that's only because of the legal action, the lack of legal action.
Hey, this is
Matt.
Hey, go ahead. Matt, we can flip a coin. I'm sorry, bud.
No, go ahead.
I won the coin toss, so it's okay. I'll be brief. It's a good question, Mike. I would, you know, to go along with Mike Hiller there, I would pat ourselves on the back before the pandemic. I believe we were operating right at around a 10 because we were putting out a lot of record-breaking months and year-over-year annual record-breaking years. And then we've had a slight dip for sure. I would still put us at an 8.5 or a 9. I don't have a great fact to put behind that, but I will go off of a small dip in percentage in our year-over-year monthly results, but we're still doing very strong. We are primarily in higher education, and we do see a small dip in placements. And some of that is the timing of the year, which would happen in any given year. Some of it is our clients having specific accounts put on hold based on their own policies or based on their own state rules. And we also have some schools just not fully operating at full capacity. They're still, of course, work from home and remote and whatnot, just not under normal circumstances. So there's not quite the same level of placements we would have had in the previous years. But other than that, the vast majority of our staff is humming along, and we've only had a very, very small dip between March and April, and May and June pipeline is looking very strong right now. Oh, go ahead, Matt. Sorry about that.
No problem. This is Matt. We are seeing, we've just had some really good months. And despite the pandemic, I would put us at a 9 only because I don't know what it would have been had the pandemic not happened. In Florida, you know, we have a very sane governor that's trying to get everybody back to work very quickly. It took a lot of criticism, especially in the media. I don't know if it's just because of the type of debt being medical. But, you know, healthcare workers are the heroes. They still are. And people are wanting to see their doctors. I think what we're going to see is a decline in a couple of months because of the suspension of all the elective surgeries, necessary surgeries, and doctor's visits, not to mention people that have been scared to death by the media and are afraid to go to the hospital and who may, you know, be getting more ill just by staying at home. So I would give us a 9 only for that reason. We had a great smooth transition. The only hiccup was when all the schools and everybody tried to get the kids back online for internet bandwidth. There was a competition for internet bandwidth. So, you know, there was a few days where you might have to switch to your phone or something like that as a network instead of your home. But, you know, I think it's been I've been pleasantly surprised. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Matt. Pleasantly surprised is the word.
I think it's really interesting. Pleasantly surprised, you know, someone who was, you know, you were a little, you know, Irene, you said you were a little bit worried. I think everybody, you know, thought that, you know, that there was going to be a very serious problem, a very serious issue in the industry may not recover from. So the fact that, you know, all of you are giving such high marks, I think is great for you individually and separately, but also for the industry as a whole. So I'm wondering if everyone's doing so well now, are they going to keep doing it this way when you know if and when you get the chance to go back to your office, or you know what if you know maybe we can talk spend a few minutes talking about sort of what you've learned and how to you know how to apply that going forward. So that when you know things go back to the way they were, you can sort of take what's working now, take what was working before, and maybe do even better. Have any of you started to think of that yet?
I'll go ahead jump in.
I'll go ahead.
I beat you, Irene. Sorry.
Yeah, you go ahead.
So, Mike, we are right about 95% of our collection staff. So we've got 250 collectors. So about 95% of them have been working from home. The vast majority of that 95% was from the very beginning. We did phase some out after the first week or two. The ones that are currently still in the office either have or more than likely have a situation at the house where it's just not ideal at all for them to be able to work. And we are accommodating that for them. It's a very large office, fortunately, so there's a lot of social distancing and whatnot. The majority of our executives are going into the office, and a small portion of our team leads are going into the office. Starting probably around June 5 or the first week or two of June, we will expand on bringing people back into the office, but on a very, very small scale. It's either going to be individuals who have highly expressed a want or need to come back. Again, they want to be managed or they need to be managed. They don't have the best ideal situation at home. We will let small handfuls of them come back in a spaced out time with altered office rules. And for those who are thriving or wanting to stay at home, we've extended that to a minimum of September 1. So the vast majority of our staff will continue to work from home until September 1. And we've left in a one little caveat that says if you're a collector or another admin employee who's struggling with, you know, performance, attendance, production fees and whatnot, we have the right or the ability to ask you or have you come back into the office to kind of get your productivity and attendance back in line. But hopefully we see very little of that, where people who need to come in are going to come in, and operate appropriately in that office space, and those who are thriving continue to can do so at their home.
Now, we've very similar to what Greg is saying. We only have a skeleton crew at the office. We have about 85% of our staff that is remote. We started out with about maybe 65%, and then we did a second wave of sending people home. We're really lucky that we had such a smart IT team, and they were able to get our staff, 65% of our staff, working remotely before we even had been ordered to by our governor. There was no stay at home in place when we did that. We just felt it was going to happen, so we got it going. And we had nobody working from home as far as collecting from home. You know, managers did. You know, I was able to work from home with what I do at my laptop, but we had no collectors working from home. As far as it going on in the future after this is eventually over and whether or not we want to have everybody back, during the pandemic and during all these phases of everything opening in all the different states, we're looking at it a little bit more cautiously. Our fear is if we start bringing too many people back and then someone tests positive in our office, it's going to be a bigger problem than if it's working now from home to have them at home. But what we have, the second issue is in the state I'm in Kansas, our governor had waived a lot of the restrictions that basically were making us not jumping before all this to get people working from home. We've always had it in our mind, hey, it would be great to have people working from home, but how do we really monitor compliance like we do in the office and, you know, extra training and continuous training and, you know, things like that. We figured it would be more difficult. So we have the room, let's keep them in the office. Well, we've been running out of room for a while and trying to look at alternatives to get more collectors in. And we said, okay, we need to look at working from home. But those same barriers were in place. Right now, during the pandemic, as long as it's a national pandemic, we've had the governor release things like the type of phones we could use and the type of ways we could connect. So even though our collectors are working from home, a lot of them can't have that permanent setup that we have right now. To make it a more permanent setup, we have to change the phone systems a little bit, and we have to assign each of them an RC or a computer. So, because right now they're remoting into their desktop, which is hard because they're basically using the desktop, and that helps us with compliance, but it also makes it useless as far as having space to put someone else if they're using that desktop. We learned so much through all of this. Oh, my goodness. So we feel that when this is done, we know exactly what we need to put into place to get those remote workers working from home on a more permanent basis instead of the temporary way we're doing it now. So yes, I do see that this helped us to make a big difference going forward. It won't be our other staff though. Our other staff will have to still work from the office, like our legal staff and things like that. We've done a very good job, I think, in finding ways to keep everybody getting a paycheck. A full paycheck, working their full hours, even if we had to teach them to do things they didn't do before, because there was just some things they just can't do. I mean, our legal staff is not going to court. So we needed to find other things for them to do. Our admin staff is not doing as much admin. I mean, there's just things that you're not going to be doing as much of, and you didn't have to fill the day. And we found things for them to do to make it worthwhile not having to furlough or lay anybody off. Some of those things that we found to do, we found more important than we thought, and we want to continue doing them. So this has taught us quite a bit, and I think it's going to make us a better company in the long run. You guys feel the same way?
This is Matt. We have about 15% that are still at home. The only reason for that is because of just out of caution for their health, or they have childcare situations because schools are out still in Florida. But what we found is, you know, they've been able to focus more. And thankfully, you know, we had this exercise. I say thankfully, I don't mean it really, you know, thank you for the pandemic. But in Florida, being a hurricane state and the Hanging Chad state, among other things, this has been a great exercise in how quickly we could move into action. The fact that we moved to cloud-based collection software, cloud-based phones, so that if and when anything ever happened to our physical location, we know with just an internet connection, we'd be up and running and be able to continue doing our jobs without a glitch.
And that's awesome, Keith. That's the biggest thing we're worried about that we have the problem with is we were in the middle of getting cloud-based phones, changing our entire phone system when all this happened, but we haven't done it yet. So right now we don't have cloud-based phones. By the end of the year, hopefully we will. And I think that'll make a big change for us too.
Awesome.
I'm wondering, though, you know, it seems like a large reason why things are going so well for the industry right now is the volume of inbound calls. Do you predict that the volume of inbound calls is going to remain high? Or do you think that, you know, that call volume will level off or go back to where it's been historically, and you're going to have to start doing more outbound efforts again?
This is Matt. We've always tried to maintain an inbound call center, and we drive our outbound through ATDS, where we have cell phone permission or a combination of using VoApps or SMS. So our biggest drivers in our campaigns are to prompt people to call in so that we're acting like, you know, a cashier, a customer service center, cha-ching every time the phone rings. You know, I say that facetiously, but we've always tried to do that approach to drive inbound.
We're
in Kansas. We're very manual when it comes to what we tell our clients. They like having that human interaction. I mean, we had to convince our clients to allow us to start an IVR, which we have. We just got that started recently, and it's been a big help. But our collectors have always made outbound calls besides what's on the automated telephone dialing system. We've always made outbound calls, and that really hasn't changed. If anything, it's increased. We're making more outbound calls than we were before, because like I said before, our legal staff is now making outbound calls where they didn't before. But our inbound calls, it's increased, but not so much where we could say that if it decreased again, it would be that different. I do feel, though, that our talk-offs have been a bigger change than the amount of inbound or outbound contacts that we've made. The contacts itself have been better, in my opinion. That's been the bigger drive.
So we at Williams & Fudge have not seen any kind of real drop-off in inbound contacts. And if anything, we've had maybe a little bit of an uptick. One of the things we've done is take some of the either federal or state updates of law and policy from the pandemic specifically, that it, again, in our world, very specific, changed some things with interest rates being accumulated or temporary timeouts on payments for some federal loans and whatnot. So we proactively wrote and sent out letters and or emails to a large base of our consumers, kind of just informing them, hey, are you aware of this government program or this change in law or this change in policy? And this means X, Y, and Z, contact us to discuss your options, so on and so forth. And we were able to put onto those letterheads direct government website links. So it's not just my office telling them this is the way it is. It's, we're telling you this is the way it is, but you should go to this .gov website that is clearly outlining to you how the law and policy has changed, and it affects you when you're in your loan or your debt that you have. So give us a call and we'll walk you through how that affects you. And we've definitely seen a lot of good impact from those kind of letter efforts.
And to answer your question directly, Mike, we do anticipate a drawdown of inbounds, primarily because, somewhat ironically, we're sending out more letters than ever right now, just like Greg was saying. And the summer months for us historically have been fewer inbound contacts. And so what we've done is we're slated to deploy a manually assisted text messaging platform. And we feel pretty confident just in what we've seen thus far that we're going to be able to pick up some of that drawdown in the lack of inbound calls.
Mike, I would love to talk to you more about that. I have been trying to convince the owners of the company that I'm with to do more when it came to text messaging. And we do medical debt, and they are afraid. But I would love to have a little bit of insight from someone who's using it and what they're discovering.
Just briefly, I can tell you that it's the only solution that we've found that has the manual intervention. So we handle tons of industries. You know, we're national, and we have a boatload of industries and 3,500 clients. So our biggest challenge has been consent. You know, we don't have one client that always gets consent. And so the manual intervention piece and the company that we're working with, I'm not sponsored by them. I can tell you it's SendRight, S-N-D, Right. They offer this manually assisted text messaging, and we feel really confident in their product. And we're finishing up the testing right now and ready to go live. So pretty exciting.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. I love that. That would be awesome. I'm just happy.
Hey, Mike, I would. Go ahead, Irene. Sorry about that.
I'm just happy we finally got an IVR.
That's right.
Mike, I would just add to this. I do think some of the call times are longer, and I don't know if it's because people just don't have anybody to talk to, if it's because it's medical debt, but also because, you know, by employing empathy in the phone calls and giving people true solutions, this is tax time. So this is the time of year they're typically trying to settle, clean up their credit, and by offering solutions like, you know, tapping some home equity with interest rates as low as they are, you know, they could pay off credit card debt and have a lot lower interest rate just by tapping some home equity and, you know, getting 3%, 4%, 5% interest. So by offering those types of solutions, I don't know if that's what's accounting for more settlements or it's just because it's, you know, tax time, even though it's been extended and people are wanting to clean up credit and debt just like they have in years past.
It's an interesting trend. I hadn't heard anything. I hadn't heard that call times for longer before. A couple of questions that have come in from the audience. How are you handling payments? We are having the calls transferred back to our office to be processed by our skeleton crew. Is that how everybody else has it set up?
No. We have our collectors doing what they're doing at their home. Same thing. Like I said before, the difference of what we're doing is our talk off itself. So with payments, and we do make sure that when we defer a payment or make a payment smaller or allow any type of thing that we normally wouldn't do, that we're explaining to them, you know, we're in this together. We want to work with you. We understand. During this period with COVID-19, we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to make this as easy as possible for you. And we're purposely mentioning COVID-19 over and over again because we don't want them to think they could always defer their payment plans in the future and they could never make a payment and they can have a very small payment plan all the time. But we want them to see that we're working with them now that they need it most. So our staff was told to say that. And we've forgiven lots of past due payments during all this and deferred tons of payment plans and reduced payment plans. But every single time we do it, we make sure we still set something up for the future. It's not like just, okay, well, you don't have to pay for now. Call me when it's over. It's that, well, we're going to defer this payment for 60 days, for 30 days, for whatever. How about you pay this amount until later on? But our collectors are still, like I said, we remote into their desktop in the office. So everything they could have done in the office, they could still do in our system. And our software is integrated with our payment portal. So they're still able to do the payments as if they were in the office. We did make one thing, though, that they had a sign. They're not allowed to write anything down because in the office, it's easy to shred. They could shred any notes they take. They could shred any documents they may have. At home, we don't have anything set up for them to shred at home. So what we did was we supplied everybody with a dry erase board. And for some, well, actually, we made them just to make it fun. Our supervisors got a bunch of frames, put some colorful paper behind a piece of glass and gave them the dry erase stuff and told them it's the only place that you're allowed to make any notes purposely so they're not making notes and leaving them laying around. But as far as payment plans are concerned, we're being very forgiving with them. And I'll be honest with you, I can tell you some of the compliments that we've gotten from people that were really surprising. I mean, saying words like you've inspired me and, you know, not just simple thank yous. One person said that she was so happy working with one of our collectors that the way she phrased it was his mother would be proud of him. I mean, it's amazing some of the things that people have said and a lot of callbacks that we're getting and people are just friendlier. But I'll be honest with you, when we get those, there are some people that are just so rude and so unforgiving. I mean, there's more hateful calls now than I think we've ever gotten before for those that are hateful. I shouldn't say, I'll rephrase that differently. The few calls we've gotten that are not friendly are very hateful. More so than before, where they say things like we should be ashamed of ourselves for calling them during this time, and how could we sleep at night for calling people during this virus, during this pandemic, and a couple people have even wished us harm and ill and said we're going to rot in hell for doing this. But when you compare those handful of people that have been so out of touch, not realizing that this is a great time to call us, you're never going to get a collection agency more forgiving as you are right now. But those other people that are doing that, they're appreciating it, they're noticing it, and they're saying something. So that's how we handle the payments.
We're doing the same thing. Everything that we would do from the office, we're doing from home. We're using Amazon Web Services, and then there's a four-part authentication process that takes place. And then as far as writing down anything, everything that we do as far as payments is concerned is handled through our collection software behind a firewall, and then PDF for collection software. So no paper and pen.
No paper pen.
Yeah, we haven't.
For us, there's been no changes at all either. I mean, the cloud-based software, everything's PCI compliant. And as far as physical checks, those people are back in the office so they can process anything that comes in the mail.
Yeah, I would concur there that any physical payments are going to be handled by very small in-house staff. That's probably only going into the office very part-time. Payments from remote workers has not changed at all. It would be of the same instruction in office or out of office. Nothing gets written down, nothing gets saved or anything of that nature. So nothing should be changing from the work home environment. The collectors are setting up their payments into our system, secure, PCI compliant. And you know, our third party vendor runs those payments every single day. So nothing's changed. And as far as the talk off, yes, of course, we are being much more diligent in being open with the consumer, working with them. It is, in my opinion, there's really no magic answer that says if you say these certain things now, your payments or your post dates won't drop off. There's a lot of factors that go into that, but I would say that the drop off is minimum and it must be expected, and we're all out here surviving in this real world. So I'd rather take a slightly smaller payment just to get the consumer on a payment schedule as opposed to possibly generating a complaint or someone who never wants to talk to us again or pay us again. So instead of arguing with you to increase the payment by another $25 or trying to negotiate or talk you into doing that, which we might have done under a normal circumstance, we might be more apt to settle on a slightly lesser payment and to get you moving forward and just be done with it.
I have a question for the panel. Are any of you being asked to, or are you using the new AU, I think it's AU, credit reporting code for credit reporting accounts?
I think you mean AW.
AW, I'm sorry, yes.
We've halted all credit reporting right now. So we're not, I mean, we haven't done anything with credit reporting since this happened.
So you're not updating monthly either? The things
nope,
that were credit reported?
Oh, no. Yeah, that's what was there beforehand, yes. We haven't changed anything on that, though, unless the consumers contacted us. But we haven't reported anything new.
Got it.
All right. Excellent. Another question, an interesting one. How are you working with debt settlement companies and missed settlement payments of mutual clients? Has anyone come across that scenario yet?
We have not.
Williams & Fudge, no. We would do very little working with them anyways. Again, that's just maybe particular to my office. Very, very little interaction with them. And if anything, I think, I forget who mentioned it, saying had little to no spam calls. I think that was you, Mike. Like the spam calls aren't coming to my personal cell phone a whole lot like they used to. So it's kind of the same thing. A lot of those industries might've just, they're fly by night to begin with anyways. And they might've tucked tail and ran for the hills for all I know, because we see a major downtick in consumers mentioning debt settlement companies or even outreach from them in general, which I have no problem with.
And I agree with Greg. We don't usually work a lot. We'll contact them. If they contact us, we'll communicate back to make sure that, we have that communication. I know sometimes if they are a legitimate credit counseling company and the person's filing bankruptcy, if you don't communicate with them, at least acknowledge them. And there's a Chapter 13 plan that's put into effect. You could be left out of that plan because you didn't communicate with them. So we do communicate as long as we have a written document stating that we're allowed to communicate, giving us permission, or we'll communicate with them telling them we don't have a written document. But our communication is always the same. We don't contribute. We don't participate. We expect the payment to still be made. We haven't, so we don't really have a lot of deals with them to begin with to worry about them defaulting. So we have very little interaction with them.
Okay. Another question that came in, Greg answered it in the Q&A box, but I'm going to ask it for the rest of the panel to see what they think. I know Irene talked a little bit about this, but has there been any uptick in complaints received for reasons such as not being able to connect with a live agent, a payment posting delay, or not getting the right solution?
This is Matt. I'll just say we haven't had hardly any complaints. If anything, it's been the opposite. You know, and it's very unusual for people to go out of their way to give praise. But I know just in the past couple of weeks, I've seen some emails come across about the supervisor getting praise calls on how a collector handled things. I think it's just the empathy that you employ in your talk offs.
I totally agree. Like I said, we have much more consumer compliments than we have complaints. But the complaints we have are a lot more severe. Like I said before, they're pretty hateful. When we get there's no substance to them. They're just a hateful remark. But as far as anybody complaining, they can't get through to people because we have everybody still working. That's not really been a problem. I will say in the very beginning, it was, we had a little learning to do with how the calls are being transferred on site, off site, things like that. But our IT figured that out almost right away. So once that was figured out, we had no more people saying, hey, I tried to call and couldn't get through. And we're wondering why there's agents available. So once we fixed that, it was fine.
All right. A reminder to everybody listening in or watching, if you have a question for our panel, send it in through the Q&A module or the chat module, and we'll get it asked before we wrap up here. Moving on, let's spend a few minutes talking about culture. You know, it's come up a couple of times. We had a question come in about motivating, keeping employees motivated. I'm curious, you know, that's always been a big part of an effective collection agency operation is culture and keeping employees motivated. So I'm curious if anybody has any answers or any insights they want to share on how they're doing that these days.
Yeah, I'll jump in here, Mike. So in a word, social media. I mean, we've got a benefit of having a pretty young staff, and young for me is relative now. That's anyone under 50. No, I joke, but yeah, so Facebook, right? Anyone under 60. Facebook, House Party, Zoom, Google Hangouts. So we're using some new platforms in inviting the staff to jump on there. And then we throw out, you know, fitness challenges or, you know, different themes for different days, and you can post your pet and some of these other things that are kind of fun. And then really more of the things that we've always used, but to the nth degree. So more IMs, more emails, more text messaging, checking in on people, more phone calls, just checking in and seeing how everyone's doing, I think goes a long way. So some of the old technology and then some of the more nuanced social media type, you know, I had never used House Party before, but that's a new app that seems to be picking up some momentum, much like Zoom is, and it could be really, really useful. And then, you know, as far as things that we have to do in the office, so like Irene said, 100% of our staff is still working and 100% have the option to work from home. So short of picking up the mail and zapping those payments in electronically, we really don't have staff on site. But yeah, culture is a big thing, and that's why people want to get back in the office, right? That's why upper management might want to get back in the office, is because the fear of the culture piece, and I don't think that can be understated, but I do think that there are ways to maintain a semblance of the culture that you do have. And then when we go back or what that looks like, we personally don't have a drop dead date to go back. But when we do go back, I think we can still continue to leverage some of these pieces that we've learned during this, you know, office hiatus and come back even stronger.
Hey, this is Greg here. Some good insight there, Mike. And to piggyback off of that, from the very beginning, we started pumping out a lot of videos, fun videos. That's part one of my favorite things that I've been able to do now is learn a lot of video editing and production and put a lot of motivational stuff using a lot of footage and photos of people. And as this evolved, we turned that into having some drive-bys where, hey, this Friday, come drive by, we'll buy you a cup of coffee. And, you know, the very first one you did, that drive-by might have turned into a tailgate. So you got to nip that in the bud because you got to, you know, maintain the social distancing thing. So we corrected that real quick, but a lot of our different collection teams will put out incentives or contests where, hey, come and drive by the office at X amount of time, we'll get you a lunch, we'll get you a coffee or whatnot. We've also had contests where our management has driven out to staff's houses and done like porch drop-offs or mailbox drop-offs, taking and everything. All these things are getting photographed and videotaped, and we're turning around and producing videos for the staff. Some of our marketing personnel have sent home activity books for the kids and for family. We send a lot of mailers home, thank you cards and whatnot. We maintain contests. And one of the big things we've done is we've onboarded Microsoft Teams. I know there's a lot of different platforms, a house party, FaceTime, whatever it is, whatever platform you can get going. But we made the investment and we turned Teams into nothing, into fully operational in under a month, which is a lot of work from the IT side. But we are utilizing tons of Teams meetings, face-to-face, screen sharing for training to keep those things going, and maintaining all kinds of different contests and incentives. And in addition, and I'll cut the comment here, when you tell your staff you have a license to work from home until September 1, if you want it or need it, or if you love it, that's going to raise or lower their stress level immensely. It's going to keep them appreciative of the office and the efforts of everything you're doing to keep them employed in the first place. So a lot of the efforts and initiative that they see, they have relatives and friends and neighbors who are now unemployed, or people who are having difficulty getting that unemployment check, but here you are fully employed, a license to work from home for X more months. That's how you make your culture even stronger, when you put that trust back into your staff and you show them that you're not taking your foot off the gas just because of a difficult time. You're going to continue with these incentives and still trying to keep people together as much as possible.
So Greg, let me ask you this, because I like what you're saying. So what happens on August 31st, which is a Monday? Do you think the stress level is going to go through the roof, or do you tell your staff, you know, hey, look, we're going to bifurcate people. We're going to, you know, if you're high risk or you live with high risk, you know, just communicate that to us, or have you gotten in front of that at all?
Yeah. So there's been a couple of email progressive announcements from our president, who maybe there's been three or four saying, hey, office is closed for 2 weeks. You know, that was like, you know, beginning of March or middle of March. And that extended into end of April, and then we'll revisit May 15th. So it's a continuous dialogue with the staff, and a month from now, that message could change, but at a minimum. So way before August 31st, I can guarantee there'll be some sort of an update on get ready, this is happening, or hey, October 31st is the new date, you know, fill in the blank.
For sure, yeah.
But people appreciate it. Yeah. That's the thing. They love being able to plan out the next 3 months, as opposed to I have no idea what the next 3 days are going to bring.
Yeah, you're never going to over communicate. That much is certain.
Yeah.
I'd like to add something that really helped. We always had, I'd like to say, pretty good morale in our office to begin with. But I wondered after all this if some people thought some of the things that we said as management was just words, saying like, you know, not just, yeah, we really do care about you. And I think there was a few naysayers that I think that, well, yeah, they do these things for us because it's in their best interest too, not just because it's us. But we kept everybody on staff and didn't follow anybody, even those employees, like I said before, that really didn't have anything to do. We found things for them to do. I think there was a different feeling out there of everybody, like, hey, wow, they really do mean that they care about us as individuals, and it's not just all about the company, and we are part of a team. And that was great to see some of the comments that came back from our staff thanking us for not letting them go, knowing that they really didn't have the duties that they normally do. So that was one thing that did it. What we tried to do was build even more on that morale. We figured, okay, I started thinking about a lot of my staff. I know many of them are not crafty whatsoever, don't sew or anything. I used to be a seamstress many years ago, so I made a bunch of masks both for their adults and for children. And I started dropping them off, kind of like to go for what Greg said. I didn't take pictures of it. That would have been a good idea. But I started dropping them off at their houses, enough for their kids and stuff. And I put, you know, instructions of how to put filters in and all that garbage. But I also said, if you want to bring it to the office when you're back, that's fine. If not, this is for you when you go to the store. This is for you when you're going doing different things out in public to keep you safe. And boy, the reaction I got back from that, after I made over 200 masks, and I couldn't believe the reaction I got back from that from the staff was the personal thank yous. I think they felt more like we cared about them. So as far as that stuff is concerned, we've really had morale been very, very high. Now, I mean, people forget things, and if this thing lasts for 6 months, that same morale that same stuff isn't going to work so much. But right now, it's worked great. We've also done a lot of things, like Greg said, to make sure that we're communicating with them, having face-to-face meetings like this, making sure that it's not just over the phone meetings. We made the meetings more regular, like little huddles in the morning for certain staff, and, you know, asking them what they're doing, and side-by-side training has still been the same through shadowing, so people could still see their managers and their leads. And I mean, we've tried to make it fun. We're not having the regular games that we usually have with our staff, but we found a couple of people were very creative on how to do off-site games. So we're still doing games and contests to keep them, you know, happy and functioning. So far, so good. I wouldn't want to see this last for a really, really long period of time. And like we've talked about before, some people are really going to be good at being remote workers basically permanently, but some won't. They just won't. They need to be in the office. And like I think it was Greg who said before, you're welcome back in the office when the time comes. But for those of you that we feel are risks or high risk, or for instance, we have a lot of beef packing plants out here in Kansas, in Western Kansas especially. We have two offices in Western Kansas, and the beef packing plants have been hit pretty hard. So anybody who was working in the office out of the skeleton crew that we knew had relatives that they lived with that worked in the packing plants, we told them they had to work from home. And we set them up from there. And it's a good thing we did, because two of those people wound up testing positive a couple of weeks later. So we were really glad they weren't in the office at the time they were doing that. If we didn't send them home, they would have been. I think the rest of the staff was very appreciative that we were thinking outside the box with that. And even though they wanted to be in the office, made them go home. So things like that have helped our morale greatly. They see that we are looking out for them. And I think they're trusting us even more and more for when the time comes that they have to come back or will come back to do the right thing to make sure they're safe.
I'm curious. There was a question that came in, and I'm going to add to that. But first, before I do, I want to mention, Mike, you're the second person this week on a webinar who's mentioned House Party. We had someone talk about it earlier this week, using it as a sales and marketing tool to meet up with clients and prospective clients. They were using the House Party app. So I guess it's got applications all over the industry.
That's right, an interesting way to use it. Yeah, it came from our staff, actually. They were using it with friends before this whole thing came about, and they recommended it. And so we're using it just for staff, but that is an interesting application for sure.
So my question is, have any of you made any changes to your incentive plans, and or are you measuring employee or collector productivity any differently than you did when they were in the office?
This is Matt. I mean, we haven't changed our incentive plan. Nothing has really changed. And even the way you measure, I mean, collectors are pretty easy to measure as far as performance and when they're on and off the dialer and stuff. So, I mean, if anything, we've seen a productivity increase just because those that like to work from home probably will want to in the future. And that's something we're considering, you know, when our lease is up.
Yeah, we haven't.
Hiring pool. Oh, I was just going to say it expands your market of where you can hire from and have people work potentially anywhere in the States.
Yeah, that's right. We haven't changed our incentives, and we have seen productivity. That's one of the things that surprised me, in addition to the speed at which we were able to get everyone up and running from home, is how effective everyone really has been. It's nothing short of amazing, really. So we haven't changed our incentives at all. And here's one of the unanticipated things is, you know, you break at 5, have dinner, come jump back on for an hour. You know, that's nothing that's ever going to happen if you're working from the office only.
Yeah, so I agree with Mike and Matt. We have also not changed the actual structure of our commission base or pay. However, we were a little bit more lenient, specifically in the months of March and April. We kind of suspended some of our minimum goals and whatnot just to kind of give some leeway to the collectors as they move and adjust and adapt to the work from home. But really starting in May, we kind of flipped the script and said, okay, everyone's got this under their wings now, we're buzzing along, and that's where we put back on. All the goals are back intact now. Production and productivity is back to our normal standards. Because if you think about it, if you're in the office, I mean, we're having countless events throughout the week, countless meetings, distractions. Well, of course, you have distraction at the house, but all these meetings, all these functions, a lot of them are by the wayside now. And as Mike just said, yeah, it's a lot easier for you to take a break or to put in some time later. So if you're working the same number of hours, if anything, we're going to expect even better productivity. But we're measuring to the same standards. We're not dipping. We're past the point of we're going to give you some leniency because we're all used to this by now and all systems are humming. And you have the time throughout the week to maintain productivity, which should equal same commission and fees. So for the time being, we're still holding steady, but of course, as the wind changes, we'll be ready to change with it.
We thought we were going to have to change our you know, what we pay people, what we are, their expectations of their goals, only because we were not positive how the not doing legal action was going to hurt us or affect us. We never talked about it with staff. We talked about it amongst us saying, okay, we have to watch this, because the way it works with legal action is what you do today really affects you in dollars 30 to 60 days up the road, because you can't just file suit against somebody and start collecting money the next day. You have to go through the whole court process and dates have to, you know, filing dates and service dates and all that stuff. So usually 30 to 90 days later, so about 60 days. So we were thinking, okay, we're going to probably have to reduce goals in a month or so. But like I said before, because of everything else we did and because of how it all worked out, our collectors really aren't bringing in much less, if at all, less at all. If anything, they're bringing in the same thing. So we never changed anything that had to do with our goals or our expectations. But we did definitely change how or add to how we're looking at numbers. We want a more comparison. Plus, because we want to put some of this stuff on a permanent basis, we want to have some type of numbers that we could see, okay, if it's working like this now and it's not a perfect setup, what are the expectations for later on if we have offsite employees? Should they be different from the expectations from our on-site employees? And if they should, why? If they shouldn't, why? Whether it's less or more. So we're collecting much more data now than we ever had before in different reports that we've created, both from our vendors and doing manually, to see enough, because if we have that information, it'll make us, I think, a little bit easier later on when we transition back and if we decide to actually make permanent off-site collectors, how to monitor them and how to check on their productivity. So yeah, we have made some changes there.
With respect to the remote, the work from home versus work in the office, is it going to be an either or scenario where employee can choose, I'm going to be an office employee or I'm going to be a remote employee? Or will you allow them to either sort of move from one to the other day by day? Or, you know, to Mike's, to your example earlier, Mike, can you, you know, work from the office then go home for dinner and then allow them to sort of put some more work at home after dinner in the evening? I mean, have you kind of thought through that part of the process yet?
I'll go ahead there. I was pausing for someone, but I'll jump in real quick. I think that's a very good question. I think a lot of these things were going to come into play in the next 5 or 10 years, if not sooner anyways. And we're all now forced to adapt to the remote environment. And as we're talking about, we're thriving in it. So the answer to that, Mike, is being mapped out as we speak. It's somewhat uncertain, but we are wide open now. Prior to this pandemic, in our company's 35-year history, we tried 4 people from work from home if they moved a couple states away. And all 4 of those experiments failed miserably. And now fast forward to where we actually know what we're doing now and we can provide proper equipment and support and whatnot. I would envision that we would desire to have the vast majority of the office come back to the office, with caveats being there might be some room for some flexibility, the go home and put another hour or two in from home, or have some work from home options be highly incentivized. There's going to be a contingency of the staff that really either both wants to be in the office because they love it, they thrive in it, or they can't be at home for whatever reason, or people who just need to be in the office because they just don't have the responsibility or the capability to be self-directed at home. So I think it'll be a mixed bag, but the final picture, at least in my office, is one for us to mold. It's kind of exciting. And as we all know, just like in politics, once you give someone a benefit or something, it's very hard to take it away. So as the next couple of months roll out, our staff gets super comfortable and happy with some of the benefits of work from home, such as myself. I'm loving it, to be honest with you. It's going to be, of course, I'll go back to the office when the time is right, but I'm going to miss some of these perks and benefits from being at home all day. So,
well, and if you don't offer it, your competition's going to, right?
That's very, it's a good point.
So, so I think one of the things that Matt mentioned earlier, that one of the greatest benefits of work from home employees is going to be your talent pool. You know, so we're in Michigan here. We're in a very diverse area. At least the office is in a diverse area, but I don't know that that's the case around the country for some of our competitors. So if you don't have online employees, your talent pool is going to be a lot smaller than it otherwise would be. You're going to be less diverse, more likely, and your competitors are going to offer work from home. So I think this just accelerated, to Greg's point, the blended atmosphere, work from home and office.
I agree. And I think it can be a combination of both. But also, I've talked to my CEO about using this as an incentive for in the future. You know, there's all kinds of monetary incentives, but this is one of those free incentives that, if anything, it saves, Irene, you touched on it, it saves the employee gas. You know, they can get up, and if they're able and capable and can be tracked, like a collector can, I think it would be a fantastic non-monetary reward to be able to offer you top collector or top 10% or whatever of staff.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. I think that as far as benefits are concerned, it's going to make us stand out in the, and not just in our industry, but as an industry, that we're able to offer remote workers, because there are some people that just don't want to be in an office all day long. We had a woman, she was hysterical. One of my collectors said, please don't make me work from home. My kids will drive me crazy. Please make me come to the office, because she has six kids. And I could see that she really, you know, she meant it. She really meant it. I had another person who lost a child who just didn't want to be home. She was still depressed. I mean, there were just things that people want to be in the office, but then other ones were like, please, you know, I hope I'm one of the first to work from home. My children are older. It won't be a problem with my children, but I really need to be near them right now. Sure, you could do this from home. You show me a picture of where you're setting up to make sure that you're in an area that's private and secure. You follow all the rules, work from home. I think it's a great plus. It's better than a raise for some people. But having the option, the way I envision it is that we would have remote workers who are primarily remote workers, but they would still have to come into the office every once in a while, whether it was once a week, once a month, I don't know. We'd have to look at that when the time comes. But I do think they should physically be present every once in a while to be able to get to know, you know, personally get to know their coworkers and be familiar with their bosses and things like that. I think that it's a good atmosphere. I don't think they should be 100% always working from home. I like the idea about having people that can transition to both, part-time home, part-time office. I never even thought of that, but that's a really good idea too. I love that one. Thank you.
It's interesting that, you know, the past 5 years, one of the buzz expressions or buzz phrases is, you know, work-life balance. And now we're talking about some employees want more work and less life balance. But it's true. Yeah, you know, some people do like going in the office. You know, I like the 30-minute commute to kind of decompress myself. But I've got younger kids, so it's an hour in the morning and a couple hours in the afternoon that I wouldn't otherwise have. So taking advantage of it while it lasts.
Right. We've only got a couple of minutes left. We've just about run out of time, but I wanted to go around the panel and maybe give you each a chance to share some parting words of wisdom, summarize what you talked about today, maybe touch on something you didn't get a chance to mention, but thought was worth mentioning and throwing out there before we wrapped up. Your vision for the future, you know, what you're binging on Netflix or Amazon, whatever, however you want to wrap it up, I'll give each of you, we'll go around the panel and give each of you a chance to share some parting words of wisdom and parting remarks. Irene, we'll start with you.
Okay. Well, I would say overall, learn from what this is forcing you to do. If you don't take something from this, you're losing out on so much opportunity, because it's not just learning what is obvious, like, hey, can I work from home? Can we do this? Can we do this type of staff? But it's finding ways to improve morale, improve your business itself. Take those compliments that you're getting and share them with your clients. Clients love to hear when their patrons are happy with their collection agents, because it's not often that you get that. Share those compliments. Tell your staff. Anytime you get somebody saying something nice, email me. Keep a nice version of everything and then share them. It'll really help a lot. And continue to go to things like this. When you hear what happens with the rest of us, you realize, well, maybe what I'm doing is right. It's not so bad. And the problems I'm having, everybody else is having. And the good things I'm finding out could be happening to me too. But my biggest takeaway is learn from the experience. Don't just use it as I got by and I made it through COVID. Take something from it and improve.
I'm dying to ask you what you've learned.
What I've learned?
Yes. What have you? That's great advice. Have you taken it?
Yes, I've definitely taken it. Learned a lot about. I did learn who I could trust and who I can't trust. A lot of stars came through with all this. I mean, I have a couple of supervisors that I mean, they're going to get big time bonuses when this is over, and they're going to get a lot of perks out of this. And then I have one that I'm not too sure I want to keep a supervisor anymore. I mean, I learned that alone, but I learned how to better our company. I really did. A lot of tools. Like even the tools that I get on these different sites, I never even heard of House Party. I've just learned so many things.
I think it's also changed the way corporate America thinks. I think there was, you know, traditionally there's been this issue of trust. You know, people work from home, they're going to be playing, watching TV. And I think it shows, especially given the ability to track and monitor, being in the cloud, using Zoom, you know, checking in and being able to see, you know, account by account from minute to minute what a collector is working on. I think it really changes the whole corporate trust level. And I think, you know, when it comes time to renew a lease, for instance, like we're looking at, there's no need to have the square footage and the presence that we have right now when we know it works. This pandemic has proved that people can work from home, certain people. Others, like you said, they're going to have to work from the office, or they may want to go in the office. But it certainly opens up the realm of possibilities of what you can do in the future.
Excellent. Thanks, Matt. Greg?
Yeah, so thanks to the individuals who logged on with us today. You're obviously with us for very good reasons. You don't just log into these things for the fun of it. Hopefully you got something out of it. The reality is, it's not meant to sound negative, but it's just straight to the bones of it, and that's adapt or die, sink or swim. And you're all doing that. You wouldn't be logged in here today with us if you aren't doing that, or if you aren't highly pursuing that. So good for you and great job. Keep going. And at the end of the day, when you take care of people, everything seems to fall in line. So take care of your staff, guide them to take care of the consumers, look after your clients, and you'll thrive no matter what your future environment looks in. And be super, super flexible and open-minded. Everything is possible. Take care, everyone. Hope to see you soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Greg. Mike?
Thanks, Mike. So I always knew that you had a charming personality, but what I've learned is that you got a storied history to tell of your own. So I'll keep everybody waiting with bated breath for that. But no, seriously, we're all in this together. So embrace change. You know, a lot of times change, and Mike's heard this before from me, but change can feel like an affront to your way of life. But don't let it feel like an affront to the way you've always done business. It's inevitable. To Greg's point, and to quote one of my favorite Star Trek antagonists, Jean-Luc Picard as the Borg, resistance is futile. So you got to embrace change, and you got to roll with the punches. And I will add that, you know, we've been tracking compliments for quite a while. Last year we had 1,623, 2019, beginning to end. As of May of 2020, we've already surpassed that number. So we've already tracked and logged over 1,700 complaints, or compliments rather. Complaints are far, far fewer. So I would challenge everyone to track compliments just like you track complaints. And you might be surprised. And how do you define a complaint, compliment? How do you define a complaint, right? I'm using those interchangeably, but it's, you know, we define a compliment as anything more than thank you very much. It's got to be something with some context in it. But we've noticed that, like Irene said, consumers are more complimentative than ever, more appreciative than ever. 1,700 compliments speaks to that. You're still going to run into the, you know, I'm not naive to the fact that you're still going to run into what we euphemistically call the excuse mongers, right? If it wasn't going to be, don't you know there's a pandemic? Why are you calling me? Then it would have been, why are you calling me? I'm down on my luck, you know. But Matt, you had asked if we use AW code. We don't. For natural disasters, we're not using it, at least right now. And although this isn't legal advice, I would say the flip side of that, complaints, you can always delete. I know it's not highly recommended, but if it is a disastrous complaint, maybe you delete it if you're not using the AW code. But I would say in closing, you know, if we're not going to tell our story, who is? So start tracking compliments, put it on social media, let us know. The people on this call will forward it on, will like it, will embrace it. And I think if we tell that story, all of us will be better off. So stay healthy and stay safe, everyone. And thanks, Mike, for the invite.
Mike, I would just like to add, yep, we really appreciate you putting on these webinars. And I would encourage everybody to go to your new LinkedIn site and follow you on LinkedIn as well. But accountsrecovery.net has just been a true blessing to us and many of us in the industry. So thank you.
Well, excellent. I'm going to track that compliment, Matt. Thank you. Very nice
I'm
of say you to say.
Ditto on that one.
Well, excellent. Well, thank you, everybody. I'm very touched by that. I'm completely and continually overwhelmed by the fact that so many people say yes when I ask them to do these webinars. So Irene, Mike, Greg, Matt, this was an awesome discussion. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you so much for taking your time. Thank you so much for being so willing to talk about what's working at your companies. This is great.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Y'all have a good day.
All right, everybody. Thank you. Take care. We've got webinars coming up. We're doing them every day now, it seems like, or actually not, this seems like it is every day. So go to accountsrecovery.net. You can see the list of what's coming up. Sign up. I hope everyone stays safe. If I don't talk to you tomorrow, have a great Memorial Day weekend, and we'll talk to everybody soon. Take care.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.